A lot of episodes of Ad Tech Unfiltered are based on a common presumption that advertisers are trying to sell something to the audiences they target. But what about when an ad campaign isn't trying to get someone to buy shoes, insurance, pizza, or office supplies? What about when an organization is trying to further a cause and sell the value of giving with a purpose? There are over 1.6 million nonprofits and other mission-driven organizations in the United States. This episode, we'll be discussing this grouping and what distinguishes their advertising campaigns from other campaigns we're more commonly seeing. To get some perspective, we'll be speaking to Jordan Rudin, one of the founders of Craft and Commerce, an ad agency that focuses on empowering nonprofits, advocacy organizations, and purpose-driven brands to effectively harness paid media. But before speaking to Jordan, we'll be speaking to the leader of a nonprofit called The Network. The Network is a membership-based organization that advocates, educates, and organizes to end domestic violence. Amanda Pyron is their executive director. She shares perspective on what cause-driven organizations are up against as they work to further their mission, while consistently confronted with the pressure of raising enough funds to continue their important work. This episode on cause and mission-driven ad campaigns starts right now. Amanda, thanks so much for joining me to chat about The Network.
Sure. Thanks for having me. I always love to talk about The Network and the great work that we're doing, and this is a wonderful kind of innovative format to do that in.
Can you give me a description of what the mission of The Network is?
The Network is a collaborative membership organization that seeks to educate and advocate and organize direct service providers and victims and survivors of domestic violence for social change. And what we really want to do very plainly is amplify the experiences and the voices of victims of domestic violence so that elected officials, policymakers, decision makers, and the wider community hear about the lived experience of survivors and they work for change, you know, because as we say today, we're all in this together, but we know that there's so many people being left behind, and the network exists to really amplify those stories so that we can all create kind of a better and more just society.
So with the mission that the network has, what are some of the goals that you have to bring to light the mission of the network?
Well, we have to create an environment in which domestic violence survivors can succeed. That's our number one mission. And we do that by working with advocates and counselors and social justice organizers who work directly with victims to tell stories. To tell stories about what life is like for an immigrant survivor, what life is like for a Black survivor living on the South Side who doesn't feel like they can call the police, for what life is like for a young child going to school every day knowing that when he goes home, he's going to go home to a violent household. And we tell those stories to funders, you know, and ask for more funding and different funding. And we tell those stories to elected officials like the mayor and the governor and Cook County officials, to try to create more resources for victims of and survivors of domestic violence and to try to get justice for victims and survivors of domestic violence when they do interact in the criminal justice system. And we train and educate. So we want the folks who are going out to work with these survivors to have the best information. And so we really do have as our goals to advocate first and foremost for a better system for victims and survivors. To educate those who are working with victims and survivors on best practices, and to organize and to mobilize and to let our communities know that domestic violence is an issue that affects everyone, and that we need social change, and we need gender equity, and we need racial justice to bring about a good quality life for people who are exposed to violence.
What are some of the biggest challenges you face at the network as a nonprofit organization?
Well, I think it's a difficult time to be running a nonprofit, to be working in this space. You know, there are so many challenges that survivors experience and that nonprofit organizations experience that it can at times seem overwhelming. I think we're asked to do a lot and we want to do a lot with very limited resources. There's an incredible amount of competition among issues and organizations where really they shouldn't be, because we work with survivors who experience gun violence. We work with survivors who experience homelessness. We work with survivors who experience racism and discrimination, either for being women or for being a racial minority. And all of those issues are interconnected. And yet, you know, we're put in competition for funding because there just simply aren't enough resources for victims and survivors, for social justice organizations, for community service organizations. And so we're all competing over very limited resources. It's hard to build an organization when most of the funding that we get is restricted for immediate need and crisis-based services. So you can't build out, you know, a business in the same way you would a for-profit business, focusing on marketing, focusing on, you know, product placement and where you are and where you're seen. And, you know, yet we still have to do those things. We still have to make sure that victims and survivors know the hotline exists, for instance. We have to make sure that you know, elected officials and educators and policymakers know that the network is active and engaging so that they look to us as a resource. And yet we aren't really well resourced to make that happen. And so, you know, it really is about kind of trying to make the most out of the least amount of resources.
I wanted to ask you, what are some of the key audiences that the network is seeking to reach?
Well, first and foremost, we always want to reach victims and survivors. You know, we want to reach folks who don't feel like they have any other options, who are concerned about the options that they do have. We want to reach victims and survivors who want to make a difference, for people who are interested in, you know, in seeking help. A lot of times victims and survivors want to give back immediately once they get themselves to safety and they've, you know, progressed. We have a lot of survivors who reach out, who want to train, who want to be involved with the network. And we certainly want to make ourselves available to them as the first audience. And then, of course, we've got our advocates who are working every day in the field that need the best practice expertise that we provide, that need the training that we provide. We have elected officials, a core audience who need to hear from us, right? They need to hear the stories of victims and survivors to create better policies, to fund better services, to work better together, to make sure that when victims and survivors flee, when they go to move to safety, that they have the resources they need to survive. And so that's a key audience for us. And of course, there's donors, right? There are people who don't work in the field, but who have a great amount of expertise that they can contribute to an organization like the network. And that's incredibly important for us. Like I just mentioned, you know, one of the biggest challenges is, you know, restricted funding and not being able to really develop our business, our nonprofit, the way we feel like we should, because we've got, you know, certainly to kind of target the limited resources we have to direct supports to advocates and to victims. And so when we get unrestricted financial donations, we're able to then develop a marketing plan or advertise our services or promote the hotline downstate or do all of these things that on an ongoing basis, we just simply can't do. And so donors are a huge audience for us because it allows us to really broaden our reach and expand kind of the breadth of services that we can offer.
Given the fact that we are dealing with a continued quarantine in some capacities, even though some things are opening up, there are still limitations around how often people are going out. So a lot of their interactions with the world are taking place online. They already were. They're happening even more so now and have been for some time. So I wanted to pivot the conversation in a direction that falls maybe a little bit more into my realm of the world, thinking about people's digital footprint and how they're interacting in online spaces. So what are the actions that you want your audiences to be taking online?
Well, we love online digital engagement, right? Because that's free. And for a nonprofit like us, that's really, really helpful to have such a platform online that we can reach all of our core audiences. We have a great website now. It's www.the-network.org. And it was created through a donation. The network won a contest, and we were able to work with a great digital media company on our website. So we're very, very proud of it. And we're putting a lot of great content on it. We've got policy platforms and survivor stories and information about resources and information about staying safe and healthy in COVID-19 and information on the intersection of racial justice and domestic violence. And so we're proud of the content that we're putting on there, and we want folks to go and engage with it, learn more about the issue of domestic violence and what you can do as a community, as a supporter, to change the landscape for victims and survivors.
And in addition to information as far as like going to read about a lot of the things the network is doing, people can also go to the website if they want to make a donation or if they want to buy tickets to like a fundraising event that you guys are having, right?
Absolutely. Donations are obviously a key function of the work of the network, as I've discussed. And so our website was designed in mind to drive people to donate, right? It's at every kind of turn, you see a donate here button, right? And that's on purpose because we really do need that unrestricted funding. But there's also other ways to get involved with the network. Again, amplifying our voice online, sharing our resources is very, very helpful. There's also ways to learn, you know, on the website and to get information about our training activities.
So lots of resources on the website, thinking about things from the perspective of amplification and key parts of ensuring that an organization that is, whether it's in the for-profit space or the nonprofit space, you want to amplify your message. You can do things in the organic social media space, but if you really want to deliberately build out a strategy, you oftentimes need to create an advertising or marketing plan. What does the network do in an official marketing and advertising capacity?
So we don't do a whole lot, to be honest. As you'd probably be aware, you know, we have a great lead person, a communications and development coordinator who is creative and energetic and really has brought a lot to our team. But unfortunately, in a nonprofit space, it's hard to allocate funding for marketing and advertising because there isn't a funder or a donor who is going to fund that type of work. It just isn't seen as essential for a nonprofit. You know, if we went out and did a big splash campaign, that folks would wonder why we spent that much money on something like that when we could, you know, house victims or when we could fund the hotline to answer more calls more efficiently, things like that, direct kind of services. And so it really is difficult to kind of raise the profile of the issue or market our training or really have a strategic campaign behind policy change in a really effective way. And oftentimes you can get criticism or backlash if you spend kind of necessary needed funds on an activity like that. So it really isn't without corporate sponsorship or a large major gift specifically for advertising or multiple kind of pro bono volunteers who are willing to kind of help with something like that, that we're able to do it. So unfortunately, there's not a lot of strategic planning that can happen in that space. You know, that's one of the challenges of you know, running a nonprofit business is that you you aren't able to really resource a lot of that public-facing work in the same way that another small business would be able to.
Yeah, it definitely is a sticky position to be in for all the reasons that you mentioned. And it almost has to be one of those things that you mentioned as far as somebody who's deliberately donating funds with the intention that it goes to advertising and marketing, or you're specifically leveraging existing staff to do marketing and advertising work to the capacity that you're capable of doing it without leveraging the more like official or specialized expertise of like an advertising organization. So that is a subsequent conversation I'm actually going to have with the founder of a mission-driven, cause-based agency. So I think I'll have some interesting information to share with you, Amanda, in the near future.
That's great. Thank you. I'd love to hear it.
After speaking to Amanda, we wanted to address some of the marketing and media challenges she described by turning to an expert familiar with the complexities faced by nonprofits like the network. So we turned to Jordan Rudin, who has led the creation of numerous award-winning nonprofit and mission-driven ad campaigns. The cause-driven ad agency he co-founded, Craft and Commerce, has helped the Girl Scouts of America transform its membership funnel. San Francisco MTA achieved record reductions in traffic fatalities, and Bright Pink inspire over 2 million women to assess their cancer risk. We start off our conversation by addressing what cause-driven marketing is.
Jordan, what is cause-based or mission-driven marketing?
When you are marketing for a cause, you know, what you're really doing is trying to tell a story and, you know, often just pull on the heartstrings of the individuals you're reaching out to. There's often not a hard transaction happening, like when you're buying a pair of shoes or selling some consumer packaged good. You know, you're really trying to tell a story and get people to align around your mission and have them want to support your mission. And cause marketing can come in a few different buckets. Obviously, you know, the most well-known is fundraising, you know, all around donations, but often cause-based marketing can also evolve around mission delivery of the organization that you're putting out into the marketplace. It can be lead generation for specific needs, such as volunteering. So, you know, donation is always kind of what comes to mind first, but often there can also be just other aspects to it.
What do you have to think about differently when planning for a cause-based or mission-based campaign compared with a campaign that you would run for a for-profit organization?
Yeah. So one thing you have to be really thoughtful about when you run cause or mission-based campaigns is that, you know, you're very often really dealing with precious dollars of an organization. Some of what we spend for our nonprofit partners might be considered rounding errors for a large advertiser. So you really want to be very, very thoughtful about how you use those dollars, making sure that you are reaching the audiences you need to reach, getting, you know, hitting all your goals. So if it's a brand campaign, that you're really getting that frequency right. If it's a direct response campaign, just making sure you're getting either the lowest rates or you're just in all the right spots.
You mentioned brand campaigns just now. And so often when I think of brand campaigns, I think of the Allstates, Fords, and Procter & Gamble's of the world. But branding obviously isn't just a concept that matters to for-profit organizations. It's really important to nonprofits as well. But nonprofits are in the tricky space of having limited financial resources. Even with that being the case, there are nonprofit organizations and mission-driven organizations out there that have brands that are household names. Names that come to mind include Autism Speaks, American Red Cross, Susan G. Komen, just to name a few. What's enabled some of these mission-driven organizations and nonprofits to achieve brand recognition like the Pepsis, Cokes, and Allstates of the world?
Yeah, those organizations, and you know, you can also look at St. Jude or the ASPCA. A lot of those organizations have invested heavily in two buckets of advertising, but each of them have quite a bit of dollars going to broad-based media, such as television and radio, but also highly targeted digital acquisition. And those organizations are running either very large-scale direct response campaigns, show you the puppy in the cage with the puppy eyes, and you know, a clear call to action, donate now, and Sarah McLachlan's going to give you that number. Brands like Red Cross often, and not always, but often, and Autism Speaks as an example, you know, they run very often brand campaigns. American Cancer Society, also they run brand campaigns where they are merely elevating the brand and the mission of what you do, raising that awareness, and then pair those with often targeted digital campaigns to select audiences. Often those campaigns and the targeting intersect with the broad media buys, along with the broad television or radio media buys, along with the tighter digital buys.
Let's say I'm a nonprofit or mission-driven organization, and I'm executing my very first advertising campaign. How are you going to advise me on how to use my dollars the most effective way possible when this is my first rodeo?
Clients have come to us in a few different buckets with paid media. So I'll break it down into a few ideas. So the first is sometimes they come to us with brand. Sometimes they come to us with very specific outcome focus, such as donation or volunteers. And then there's like a third bucket, which might be around their programming. I think those are kind of just the broad buckets that we would look at. There's probably a lot more, but I think those are kind of the three big ones that come to mind. If we look at brand, really what you're looking there is frequency over a period of time. And you're going to want a lot of it to really let that message sink in. So on the brand piece, you really want to triangulate who the audiences are that you're trying to hit, especially if your dollars are limited, and making sure that you're building a real omni-channel or plan so that you're hitting that audience with high frequency across TV, radio, digital, social, all those core platforms. If you're going to do fundraising or some sort of more outcomes focus, that's going to be probably along our direct response campaign. That can go pretty wide, but you still want to be thoughtful about where you're going. But because the direct response rates can be generally lower, and social is one of the best direct response platforms just ever built, and the direct-to-consumer companies kind of proved that out a number of years ago, although they are expanding into brand now, that's going to be a big part of it. And then, you know, if you're going to do something programmatically, and I'll give one example. We have been working with an organization called Bright Pink for about 5 years now. And what we do with them is we help them drive 18 to 45 year old women into a breast and ovarian health assessment quiz, for lack of a better word. And it's very robust, and it takes about 5 minutes. And we've driven millions of women into this assessment. So this is a real focused, programmatic, mission-driven initiative. Their goal is to educate women on their breast and ovarian health, because early detection is a lifesaver for breast and ovarian cancer. And so by educating young women, they feel like more women will be educated. They feel that more women will likely talk to their doctor. More women will be likely to check themselves on a monthly basis, know their family history, and it supports the mission. So that's not fundraising. That's not brand. That's a case where you're really using your dollars to drive the mission of your organization. And what we have found is social tools, primarily Facebook, is incredibly powerful at driving those outcomes. Another version of that, when you're thinking about outcomes or programmatic-based work, might be around advocacy, trying to drive local change, sending in letters to federal government, to local legislators, state and local officials, whoever those folks might be. Again, those are very outcomes-focused campaigns to support your programming, using advocacy to support your nonprofits or causes, missions, goals.
Jordan, when you took us through the example for Bright Pink, you mentioned a lot of different advertising goals that you're set out to achieve. How do you achieve all of those in a single digital campaign?
We see it as our job, kind of on the front line, top of funnel, to really get people over to the site where that bigger educational lift can happen. And we do this by testing sometimes hundreds of art and copy variants to see what works, testing tons of targeting opportunities. You know, you can think of it as like almost running like NCAA brackets, right? Where you're just driving, you know, all these different variants and all these different messages and all this different targeting to figure out what is going to drive the scale. And once you start feeding into that scale, especially with the social platforms and a lot of the digital platforms, anything you would run on a DSP or on Google on our social platform, once you start sending that information into those platforms and those platforms start getting their signals about what's working, who's engaging, it really does start to take on a life of its own. So you really think of it as like our job is to try to figure out how to get people to the site, how to get them to engage, how to get them to take that first step, driving those outcomes. And once you get that dialed in, then often the machines will take over. But, you know, getting that art and copy right in that front part, and you have to kind of do this a little differently than you might in traditional advertising. You think of traditional advertising is very much around supporting a piece of artwork, supporting a piece of creative, winning awards around that creative, helping being part of the whole team to put that creative out into the world. And then, you know, measuring that lift months or maybe years down the road sometimes, because these are so outcomes focused, because these are so in the moment, you just have to be so not precious about what you're putting. You have to be smart and thoughtful and creative about what's going in there. But you really have to not be precious about that. You're going to try a lot of things. You're going to really test, learn, see what works. 9 times out of 10, what works will almost always shock you, because it's so often not what you think it's going to be.
So you discussed the importance of driving people through to a website as a final destination to get educated on a multitude of touch points. What about other digital experiences like engaging with a chatbot or taking a quiz? How often are those alternative digital destinations a priority?
I'm glad you brought up chatbots. That is something actually a lead generation. You know, a lot of our work for a lot of our nonprofits and a lot of our advocacy work, you know, generally drives into email acquisition of some sort, because building that top of funnel, so then those organizations can build those long-term relationships with their prospects and their constituents. We've done quite a bit of work in the chatbot space, and it's actually pretty amazing. I think everyone's seen every landing page ever imagined right now, and we know these things almost all exclusively, especially on the digital side, happen on mobile. But we've actually seen tremendous success in the chatbot space to bring down our acquisition costs, to drive very high engagement, to allow us to have timed follow-ups, you know, 24, 36, 48 hours after, to either scoop up people who didn't convert initially or bring people who did convert deeper into our relationship, deeper into the funnel. That's actually a capability that we built about 2 years ago, and we do that for a variety of things. One place we've really seen success with the chatbots is driving behavior change. And there's a handful of campaigns where we've really driven much deeper engagement than we might have previously through just traditional social or native or other traditional acquisition channels.
Another cause-based campaign goal I often hear about in the mission-driven space is driving behavior change. How do you influence how people behave through advertising?
You know, behavior change generally revolves around two pieces. When we want to run a behavior change, let's say a campaign about, you know, getting a city to increase its recycling. You know, and we really look at two buckets there. Somewhat similar to a brand campaign in that we want to drive that frequency. But for people, we also want to dig a little deeper and educate a little deeper, not just say, hey, don't forget to recycle your bottles or cans or cartons, but also to really kind of show them how and to educate them. And I had mentioned briefly about chatbots can be a really great way to do that, because we can make it interactive, we can make it fun, we can gamify it a little bit. And believe it or not, most importantly, often we can capture an email sometimes through that process, which, just like our fundraisers or just like our advocacy folks, it allows us to create a much deeper relationship over a longer period of time, driving further change, further educating those folks.
Another concern of advertisers that are nonprofit or otherwise is figuring out what they want to measure to assess the success of their campaign. How do you help them establish what their goals should be so they can identify the right performance indicators to measure?
When we start to think about measurement, we start with kind of what's our goal. So, and if we come back to the buckets of mission delivery, brand storytelling, fundraising and growth, or let's say advocacy and action, each of those would have their own bucket. So when we think about, you know, mission delivery or outcomes focused, you know, that's sometimes the easiest to measure, because that might be program acquisition, that might be a quiz completion, that might be a survey completion, that might be a chat or app engagement, right? Those are like often more simple last click attribution things to capture. When we move into brand storytelling, that starts to get a little softer. So that's where we start to think about, you can go as high level as impressions, but you can also go deeper into content consumption and time on site, video views and video completions. You also will likely try to run a brand lift study, ideally before and after, so you can try to see what lift was. You might also even run a content influence study to say, hey, when I show you this piece of content, how does it change your opinion? How does it change your thoughts of this organization? And will it cause you to take action? So that starts to get a little higher level. You know, when you think about fundraising and growth, in that bucket, you know, again, that's kind of can be a blended of a very simple last click attribution where you're trying to capture an email and put them into the funnel and then measure that over time and put them into your drip series and measure it 6, 12, sometimes 18 months down the road. And then there is softer things of, you know, when you're doing a multi-channel campaign, that you're running TV ads and you're running digital ads and you're running podcast ads and ads on NPR or something, for example, you're going to look at some simple last click attribution methods, but you're also going to look at the whole picture. Where were we year over year? You know, really, really leveling that up. And in the advocacy and action bucket, you know, again, I think you're going back to that simple last click attribution, you know, or education piece. You're looking at, did we capture an email? And in some cases, did we actually move a piece of legislation or change a government policy, perhaps?
A lot of the things you just shared around last click attribution being something that in many cases needs to become the thing that's considered from a measurement perspective as far as the efficacy of a campaign. I do imagine that there are a series of instances where you need to point a client in the direction of considering a brand survey. But at the same time, at least in my mind as a consumer who's seen a lot of those brand surveys on YouTube or in other types of digital formats, I feel like they're not that easy to deploy for mission-driven causes and nonprofits and just the cause-based marketing space. Could you elaborate?
Yeah. And, you know, the brand space is also really interesting for nonprofits too, because, you know, they just don't have the resources to go out and run large six-figure brand studies all the time. And so when we do these, we do these a few different ways. One is, like you said, we can just deploy these digitally, and Facebook and Google and YouTube do have some tools where we can deploy these, but you do have to kind of take some of those with a grain of salt. They can be a little black boxed, and there are results there. Sometimes what you can do is you can work with a third party firm, you know, but again, those can be expensive. But another option actually is when you buy media, if you buy traditional media, if you buy enough of it through certain channels, you can very often ask them to include brand studies as part of the buy. And for nonprofits, that's actually often a really nice way to kind of accomplish two things, because the brand lift studies can be expensive. If you can do a big enough buy on certain channels, they will fold that in. Certain native publishers, if you buy with them, they will fold in a content influence study. Certain broadcasters, if you buy enough radio, for example, they will fold in a brand lift study, both a pre and post insertion study. And then, of course, as I mentioned earlier, you can run studies, and as you had mentioned, through the Facebooks and the YouTubes of the world. But we do find some of those to be a bit black boxy.
So we've chatted a bit about branding campaigns in the cause-based marketing space. Let's discuss some lower funnel goals and tactics that cause-based organizations typically have. I think the most common one that is focused on is raising donations. How do you manage a cause-based organization that has invested in advertising but may have unrealistic expectations as far as the volume of donations that should net out from their advertising investment?
We get that actually a lot. A lot of folks do have different points of view on this. You know, from the media perspective, if someone just comes to us and says, we want to spend money and make more money, it kind of doesn't quite work like that. Because if you could, gosh, you know, everyone would just do that. Often those conversations are, we can help you with that, but you need to look at it in the long view. It's not as simple as putting the media dollars out and just getting like a 4x return. It doesn't quite work like that. So often, you know, if clients do come to us on the fundraising side, we really want to make sure that they're equipped on the back end to measure this long term, measure the whole funnel. We have some colleagues who run direct mail campaigns, and they won't accept clients unless they sign with them, I think, for a minimum of 18 months to 2 years. Because if you think if you're just going to drop one direct mail campaign and have a positive ROI, it just doesn't quite work that way. That there's a lot that kind of goes into it. There's a long lead funnel. There's a lot of cultivation that needs to happen. So when they come to us and say, hey, we have money we want to spend, we want to make sure that there's a whole cultivation piece around this on their kind of development back end side. And again, that starts with email acquisition, that's brand, that's direct mail. There's all these things that happen together to make sure that those both brand media spends, those direct acquisition media spends, that everything comes together to lift all boats.
When I think of donating to nonprofits and how they seek out donations, the most common media type that comes to mind for me is the direct mailer. So by comparison, what role would you say that digital plays in driving donations?
Yeah, in this space, you know, where I think you probably see the most, let's call it solicitations or asks, I mean, you really put it into two buckets. You call it in prospecting and retargeting, almost like you would in any direct-to-consumer or any e-commerce situation, right? So you're hitting brand on traditional media, you're doing your direct mail, and you're also prospecting on the digital side. Then you're seeing who's engaging, who's watching the video, who's clicking the ad, who's going over to the website. And that might be a softer ask, like, see this story, read this piece of content, or get angry about what's going on, or be hopeful about what's going on. Then you can hit them on the retargeting, hit users on the retargeting for that harder right hook donation ask. So, you know, one of the things that digital does really well is it allows us to figure out who's engaging and put that message in front of them. And then because we can often do that cross device, across social, across display, across native, even now on OTT through Hulu and all these things, it allows us to hit them multiple times and drive that frequency, having to do a little less spray and pray and really pull people through. But the retargeting is such a core part of that.
So speaking of spray and pray, and then optimizing thereafter, something that comes to mind is programmatic media and being able to leverage ad tech and DSPs. What role does a DSP or programmatic advertising play in helping you help the causes of the clients you work for?
Yeah, working with the DSP is almost like a must-have these days, at least for us. There's a few buckets to that. One is just the availability of the third-party data and targeting that we have to build our prospecting tools. Then secondarily, our ability to drive our retargeting. But where this all comes together is our ability to do this cross-device. For almost all of our efforts, when we buy on a DSP, we're buying programmatic display for both prospecting and retargeting, programmatic online video, and we find that online video retargeting is just incredibly effective as a traffic acquisition tool. Programmatic native display is also really powerful because we can, one, get those stories out there, and then two, shift the narrative based on how far down funnel the stories go. But also super importantly is our ability to see who engaged with that content. So if someone completed a video view, let's hit them with a native article. If someone completed a video view, let's hit them with a hard right hook ask for a donation. If someone came to a donation page but didn't make a donation, let's make sure we hit them again. You know, it allows us to pull people through who have shown affinity for the story we're trying to tell, the advocacy we're trying to execute, the behavior change we're trying to create, the people we're trying to educate, and pull them in deeper. So it really does kind of check both boxes in that it really gets us really wide in a thoughtful, targeted way, but allows us to build those deeper, longer-term relationships across all the channels.
What's your perspective on the role that newer social platforms play in driving donations, especially newer platforms like TikTok? Do they really enable the ability to reach younger donors more effectively?
You know, the growth that they've seen in younger audiences is incredible. Their algorithm is like just the greatest dopamine slot machine ever built. The way they just figure out how to show you just what you want to see every few hits, and then watches your behaviors shift through the usage. I also believe that, and we've looked at this, TikTok is going to have a tremendous impact in this year's election because it really owns the zeitgeist and thoughts of younger folks. The ad products on there, they're pretty basic. They don't seem to be massive traffic acquisitions. But where I think brands can really make a huge impact, and I think right now where a lot of that money is happening on TikTok is working with influencers on that platform.
Do clients ever reach out wanting to see if TikTok is a good place to reach audiences? And does it make sense to even suggest it given the early stages their advertising solutions are in?
Possibly. I think it really depends who it is, you know, but if you let's take like an ASPCA, like there's just no reason they should not have, you know, like cute dogs all day long, because actually pets do really well on TikTok. And there's a lot of like really great pet memes, you know, so that's a simple example of a way, you know, that they can leverage that and gain a following.
I just realized I asked about TikTok and Instagram and just blew right past Snapchat, which is a relatively newer platform that has a much more mature advertising solution. Have you found Snapchat playing a role in cause-based campaigns that you've executed?
Yeah. You got to feel bad when we kind of gloss over the Snapchat. But believe it or not, we have actually done quite a bit of advertising on Snapchat when we've had to reach younger audiences and found it very effective. We found it very effective in our educating young women for our health campaigns. But we've also run it for a large municipal agency, a large, you know, local government agency. They had a campaign where they wanted to drive young people into a game about urban planning. And this game was kind of built to solicit feedback from younger folks, 18 to 35. And we had tremendous success.
So I do want to ask you one or two more questions. And one of them being that at the time that we are doing this recording, we are in the midst of not only the COVID-19 pandemic, there also has been a swelling of happenings taking place in relation to racial inequality in America. And that's really selling it short as far as what exactly is happening, because you guys are in the cause-based marketing space, mission-based marketing and advertising space. Has this had any impact in how people have reached out to you all as far as how they should be putting together their campaigns at this time?
Yeah, such a good question. And as a progressive agency, you know, it's really been top of mind. You know, we've you know, helped support LGBT organizations over the years. We've helped swing progressive legislation around housing, affordable housing. You know, there's so many things that that we've done. We help these, you know, nonprofit causes. You know, there's so many things that we've done. And you know, and you kind of asked in two buckets, so I'll break it into two buckets. On the COVID side, we've been working with an organization, helping them ramp up volunteers to support families in need for specifically COVID meal delivery and things like that. So volunteer recruitment was something we literally spun up a campaign in a matter of days in early March to help drive volunteer recruitment. And then also followed on with donations all around the COVID piece. For some of our clients through the COVID crisis, we had paused some of our work. It didn't feel right. For other of our clients, we felt the presence and the work was more important than ever. Two things happened through that, you know, let's say from, you know, probably early March through probably mid-May. Marketplace costs were just very, very low. But also we saw, you know, engagement on things that really mattered really, really high. If your message is of the moment, and you really have something important to say, and you're not being tone deaf, I think it is still safe to be in market. Now, with what's currently happening with Black Lives Matter movement, some of our clients had asked us to pause some work. We are a few weeks ago, we are just starting to think about ramping that up. You know, I think every brand just really needs to look at their position in this time and figure out how they fit in, and making sure that they're doing everything that they can to right, I think, what's been a long-term injustice.
I think a lot of clients are very fortunate that they have craft and commerce to turn to for this type of really absolutely needed advice, whether they are specifically in the cause-based mission space or they are just in the general advertising space. So we're lucky to have you have this conversation with us today, Jordan.
Thanks again to Jordan Rudin, co-founder of Craft and Commerce, for all his expertise on using digital media to further the purpose of mission-driven organizations. And also a special thanks to Amanda Pyron, Executive Director of the Network, for sharing inside perspective on what one mission-driven nonprofit faces while working to fight and advocate against domestic violence. If you want to learn more about the Network, you can go to their website at the-network.org. And you can also follow Craft and Commerce by following them on LinkedIn. Mission-driven organizations face complex challenges that are often unlike those in the for-profit world. We appreciate the time and guiding us through this conversation, Jordan and Amanda. That's all for this episode.
We'll catch you next time for more AdTech Unfiltered.